Hello and welcome to Resource Report, where we share with you important information about local nonprofits and resource organizations that support the community we share, produced by Pathways to Agency. I am your host, Rainmaker. Today's guest is Holly Wetzel, Executive Director of the Crisis Clinic of Thurston and Mason Counties. We were able to record most of the interview here at Chaos, but later I did need to follow up with Holly over the phone. Here's Holly. I am here at Chaos Radio Station with Holly Wetzel of the Crisis Clinic. How are you doing today, Holly?
You know, not too bad. How about yourself?
I'm doing quite good. Can you please introduce yourself, your position at the Crisis Clinic, and how did you come to be here at the Crisis Clinic?
Yeah. So I am the new executive director of the Crisis Clinic of Thurston Mason Counties. Had just started earlier this month.
And brand new.
Yes, brand new. But I had previously been with the organization since April 2022. I initially started as a volunteer crisis advocate. At the time, I had been working in the hospital and would interact with patients, and I personally felt like I didn't have the skill set to be able to properly support them as they would vent to me about their basic needs and insecurities, as well as the mental challenges they were experiencing in the hospital. So in wanting to give back to the community and also be able to gain that skill set myself, I sought out the Crisis Clinic of Thurston Mason Counties to be able to volunteer, give back, and also gain that skill set. As a part of our volunteer onboarding program, we will pair experienced crisis advocates with our new crisis advocates. So after I had become more familiar with the phones, the executive director and the staff team at the time would pair the new volunteers with me to be trained on the phone lines. And what was really impactful at that time is I was able to see how we were training our volunteers and what opportunities there would be to strengthen our training to better support our crisis advocates when answering the calls on the phone. So I had approached our executive director at the time saying, hey, I would love to support updating our crisis training. I come from a background that's a little bit more technical, and what is industry standard for our space now is having a synchronous online piece where crisis advocates could learn online and then come into practice everything that they need to know with regards to answering the phones. And at that time, the executive director said, why don't I pay you to do it? So after that, I joined the staff team, had been there for about 2 years, and then I left the organization. But when they were in need of another executive director, I couldn't say no.
That's awesome. What a fabulous journey. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Getting more detailed on that, I think everybody kind of knows that the Crisis Clinic is a place that you can call and just talk to somebody. But I think that there's more to it than that. So what is the Crisis Clinic?
Yes. So I'll start with our mission statement in regards to that. What we hope to do through our work at the Crisis Clinic is to ultimately create a community where everyone in crisis has the support they need to survive and thrive. Now, what that means to us is, and I'll ask you this, have you heard of the phrase social determinants of health?
No.
So what that means is your environment ultimately impacts your health outcomes. So if you grow up in an area where you don't have access to nutritious food, or you don't have access to education, accessible healthcare, or just grow up in a safe physical environment, all of those factors directly relate to your ability to have health. So when thinking about our mission and why we want people to survive and thrive, what we're talking about is helping people address the root causes of their crisis, making sure that they not only receive the emotional support that they need, but the resources they need to stabilize their lives so they can survive and thrive. And for us, what that means is providing crisis intervention, but also providing resource referrals to other resources in the community. So after their crisis, they're able to reach out and begin to stabilize their life so they can thrive.
Wow, that's fabulous. That's mm-hmm. like so well-rounded, covering all bases. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And how long has the crisis clinic been around?
The crisis clinic has been around since 1972. We were initially part of a merger of four after-hours lines. At that time, that was Community Mental Health, Youth Emergency Services, Interaction Foundation, and the Evergreen State College. The Evergreen State College actually has quite a significant history with regards to the crisis clinic because they had so many of their students coming to volunteer for us that they actually donated a dorm room for us to operate out of for many years.
Wow.
So now we operate in a different confidential location, but we've been around since 1972, so over 50 years, and we've expanded multiple times since then. In 1989, that was when we opened up our first teen youth hotline. That is a for youth by youth service that we run. And that initially started after we provided a suicide awareness presentation to some students in Olympia High School, and they had presented to the staff at the time, why don't we have a teen line? And then we went to go on and make that.
That's awesome. That's a great segue into explaining what services the Crisis Clinic offers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what we offer today is largely the same that we've done towards the start. We provide a 24/7 volunteer-powered crisis hotline where our trained crisis advocates will answer calls all hours of the day. We have our dedicated youth and teen line that's answered by our trained youth and young adult volunteers for the youth in our community that need that additional support. We also provide suicide prevention education as well as community trainings for individuals related to crisis response, active listening, and understanding and destigmatizing mental health. We also provide resource navigation. So this is linking callers to community resources. We also keep an up-to-date list on our website of community resources for both Thurston and Mason County. So if we have callers who just want to go on our website, they can go and see all the community resources that are available in the community.
Yeah, and I've seen that list. It's pretty extensive.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and we have volunteers who will go in and update it all the time.
Oh, good. That's an issue sometimes, is making sure the resource lists are updated. Lots of these organizations have resource lists. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, they do. And we try to make sure that all of our crisis advocates, when they're trained, they are well informed about the resources that each provide. We try not to just provide a number to the caller and send them on their way. We try to walk them through what it would look like to call, what kind of services they provide, to try and demystify the process so they can better understand what will happen when they call.
Give them the deep dive.
Exactly. Give them the deep dive as much as we can and make them feel confident and comfortable. Because when you call the crisis clinic, it's already an incredibly brave thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That is admitting and acknowledging that you need support, and that is not easy. So to call us to get that support and then decide that, yes, I want additional support from another resource that could better support me going forward, we really want to make sure that they feel confident to be able to follow through on that.
Definitely.
Our calls can range from a variety of acuity levels. We could have callers who just need someone to talk to vent. They may need just emergency housing, a community resource, or they may be having thoughts of suicide. Just in 2024 alone, we had over 500 suicide de-escalations. So the need in our community is so strong for our services.
Wow, yeah. You know, I went through a dark phase myself, some struggles in 2021, mm-hmm. and I also called the crisis line, mm-hmm. and I found it very helpful. And I've never in my life been someone to make those kinds of calls. I would reach out mm-hmm. to friends, you know, mm-hmm. when it was that bad. But I was really at the end of everything. I had already talked to all of my friends. I was having a breakdown at like 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And my therapist had given me the number, mm-hmm. and I tried it. And let me tell you, like, four different occasions mm-hmm. pulled me out of the dark. It mm-hmm. was really helpful. You know, just throwing it out there for people who may also, like me, be hesitant in that way. Yeah, do it. Mm-hmm. They're there.
And we always are. And I think, thank you for sharing your story, too. And I think part of destigmatizing this process is being able to talk about it and share with people their stories. And that's what we try to do when we go out in the community. And as a society, I believe we've done a lot of good demystifying mental health, but there's still so much more to be done.
For sure. And sometimes that comes from generational mm-hmm. Challenges, you know, like older people. Are going to think of mental health as in a much different kind of way than younger generations, mm-hmm. you know. And then also younger generations might too be getting their ideas around, you know, what's appropriate, not appropriate to emotionally express, you know, based on their own families' mm-hmm. ideas, which also can carry stigmas, you mm-hmm. know. So definitely reaching across the generations, you mm-hmm. know, to say, you know, let's normalize open conversation mm-hmm. And awareness around mm-hmm. mental health issues, and especially with everything going on in the world today, mm-hmm. you know, we definitely need it.
Absolutely. And we've started to see that in our call volume, too. We've had, I just checked on this number recently, among youth, we've seen 3 times the amount of youth call compared to the previous year. And most of them are LGBT self-identifying youth.
On one hand, that's like horrible to hear mm-hmm. because so many people. But on the other hand, that's wonderful to hear because mm-hmm. these people are reaching out mm-hmm. and you have more positive outcomes mm-hmm. by doing so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what I think is so special about the Crisis Clinic is that we are local. We have people who know this community and they have that situational awareness that when a caller calls and says that this is happening, they can be able to provide that support that is locally informed. That has been one of our core values at the Crisis Clinic, is making sure that the confidentiality of not just our callers, but our volunteers are kept private.
Yeah, for sure. And to speak on that myself, I didn't really realize that it was a confidential location. And then when we were setting up the appointment for this interview, we were originally going to do it on site, and I had to sign I promise not to reveal this location waiver and send that back. So that was like, wow, okay. So I guess that would even protect the workers.
Yes. Yeah. Because when people volunteer to support our community in this way, where you hear people in their darkest moments, we want to make sure that our volunteers are protected and that they feel safe being in this space. We do not record or transcribe our calls. What you say on the phone stays between you and our trained crisis advocate. Also, because we're also starting to see this in the mental health space, we don't utilize AI or any of those services in ours. We've started to see that in other spaces in mental health. That's not something we will do or ever consider. So anything that we do document is aggregated and completely anonymized. It's not tied to your name. It's not tied to your phone number or anything that personally could identify you. Our database is HIPAA compliant. And we don't store any personally identifying information in that anyway. The only reason why we collect data is really just to keep the lights on, to be able to measure our impact for the purposes of grant writing. So, for example, how many suicide-related calls we've de-escalated in 2024. That comes from our volunteer just checking a box after they log a call to say that this call was related to this. We don't record any call-specific information. It is just demographic type information about what the call was about. That's it.
You are listening to Resource Report on Chaos. We will be right back after this message from the Crisis Clinic, so stay tuned. We are just getting started on the deep dive.
Are you empathetic, mature, and self-aware? Then the Crisis Clinic needs you. The Crisis Clinic of Thurston and Mason Counties provides intervention and emotional support through a 24/7 telephone helpline. To the Crisis Clinic, no crisis is too small. If you want to help bring compassion, energy, and care to your community, you can contact the Crisis Clinic and become a volunteer. To find out more, visit crisis-clinic.org or call 360-586-2888.
Welcome back to Resource Report. Let's continue with my guest, Holly Wetzel, Executive Director of the Crisis Clinic of Thurston and Mason Counties.
I think I remember on one of the times that I called, or maybe all of the times that I called, that I was either never asked my name, or I was told, you know, if it's comfortable for you, you can tell me your name, mm-hmm. or something like that, you know, so they know how to communicate with me. Mm-hmm. I've never been able to receive a name mm-hmm. of who I'm talking to, mm-hmm. you know. Not that I was really trying, but, you know, like, I think one time I did ask, you know, I did offer my name mm-hmm. because of conversation styles, you know, mm-hmm. And asked, you know, and I was like, I was told, sorry, we have to let that be confidential, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that, I was like, I thought about that for a minute. I was like, well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. you know, that's good. You know, mm-hmm. and I was like, well, that's good, 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 good. And that just actually made me feel safer mm-hmm. to know that, the Crisis Clinic's volunteers are also protected in that way. Mm-hmm. So they're valuing everyone's confidentiality.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and also going off of that, I noticed on your website you have a little tab or link at the very top of the screen.
Escape to yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is something that's become more common practice, but it can be risky to look up crisis support services.
Mm-hmm.
And we especially see this with our callers who are experiencing intimate partner violence, where they need to get that information, but it's possible that they have someone looking over their shoulder and they don't want them to find out. So having that quick button on our website is very intentional to make sure that our callers, or rather anyone who's researching whether or not to give us a call or to find any of our community resources that are available on our website, that they can quickly press that button so they go to what is considered a safe website that doesn't raise any suspicion.
Yeah, that's wonderful to know. And I tried it out myself.
And it goes straight to yahoo.com.
And you can navigate from anywhere else you want to there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Also, another issue I want to mention is mandated reporting.
Yes. So we are mandated reporters, but we do approach it in a way that keeps the caller in control. So if our volunteers hear a conversation involving immediate danger or any reason why they would need to make a report, we explain to the caller that we are a mandated reporter. So they can determine if they want to continue sharing details. Sometimes when we share that we are a mandated reporter, we will get callers volunteer even more information so that we can make a report.
That's so really good to know. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of fear and stigma also around mandated reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. People are afraid of, you know, there's help and then there's help that's not helpful.
Exactly.
And then they're the ones that get in trouble for something. And not knowing which direction that can go in. can cause concern for sharing.
And that is why we make sure that the callers are in control of the situation. When we explain, if it's the conversation veers in that direction, clearly explaining what mandated reporters mean and what that actually does. We want to make sure that our callers are making an informed decision.
So you said people might be calling for more reasons than just because they're in a mental health challenging crisis, and the different things that that might be related to. And we were also talking about the resource list. So I'd like to ask you to talk about that, like what kind of other challenges at the crisis clinic y'all deal with and how y'all deal with that. And since you have that resource list, are you working with other organizations? It's a big loaded question.
It is a big loaded question. What I will say is we have now more than ever, we are seeing from our callers and really from our community that they are experiencing more, like you said, more than just a mental health challenge. They could be experiencing substance use and inability to find housing or access to food or other basic, they experience other basic needs challenges. And that all manifests in a call. We provide the referrals. We can walk callers through what it's like to call those organizations, but we don't have as complex of a system where we can connect them to a specific person. Like, for example, if we have a caller that's a youth and they could benefit from community youth services, we can walk them through what community youth services does, what support services there could be for them, et cetera, et cetera. But we don't have a specific person that we can connect them to, like we could if we were more interconnected with other nonprofits and our community resources. So what I will say, though, is while we still have room for growth with regards to having closer community relationships with the other nonprofits that serve our community, one partnership that we're particularly proud of is our partnership with Evergreen State College and St. Martin's University. And I'll ask you this. Did you know that Washington State has a behavioral health worker shortage, especially in rural Mason County?
Wow.
Yes. And would you believe that 1/4 of Washingtonians don't have access to mental health services?
I could believe that. Mental health service is a challenge.
Yes. Now, to address this, the Crisis Clinic for many years has partnered both with St. Martin's and Evergreen to develop and grow the next generation of behavioral health professionals, social workers, therapists. What we do is we provide practicum and internship opportunities at the Crisis Clinic to provide that opportunity for the next generation of behavioral health workers to have that on hands-on training to be able to serve our community. And we train about 40 interns a year through the Crisis Clinic, and they go on to serve our community. So I view the Crisis Clinic as an integral part to our behavioral health workforce in this community.
Wow. That's really great. Like, I knew the Crisis Clinic was a big thing, but I didn't realize it was that big. And that's really good to know. And then that segues into community trainings.
Yes. So we, as of right now, we're working on our current offerings for what we want to be able to provide to the community. But what we will always continue to offer is our suicide prevention trainings. We currently provide these at no cost to our local school districts because we especially see that need for youth. But we provide this as a fee-based service to other organizations just to sustain the program.
That's wonderful. And so I saw that there's a cost. There's the option of how many people are there for the training. Mm-hmm. Where do you have the trainings? And is it like a thing that organizations come and have these trainings? Mm-hmm. Or is it a thing that like just general community members, they want to find out more? Like tell me more about those mm-hmm. trainings.
So we've done both. Our primary demographic, aside from our local school districts, is actually other nonprofits. For one of our most recent trainings, we did at the Thurston County Food Bank. Mm. And that was on levels of listening, really teaching the volunteers and employees there on how to listen in the same way that if you were, say, a crisis phone line advocate. Because there's that reflective listening, and then there's active listening, right? Mm-hmm. Being able mm-hmm. to actually internalize what people are saying and being able to reflect that back to really understand where they're coming from and to be able to properly support them.
Yeah, for sure. And so is it a thing that you can just sign up and attend a community training mm-hmm. that you're putting out there advertising that we're having this training coming up mm-hmm. and people sign up for? Or is it a thing that like a group reaches out and mm-hmm. requests a training and this is how many people we're going to have for it and that kind of thing?
Historically, we've had both options. As of right now, we're doing it on an organization by organization basis. Going forward, it's a model that we're looking at, that we can have members of the community come in and be able to learn these skills. Because ultimately, we believe everyone should have this skill set. It supports the resiliency of our community and being able to better support each other. And if we're able to provide that for more people in the community, everyone succeeds.
What does a community training curriculum look like?
Mm-hmm. In the case of our youth suicide prevention training, in particular for youth, what we cover is suicide prevention, warning signs, signs of suicide, phrases and ways that you could support others if you have a friend or close family member or anyone that you care about that's experiencing this crisis, some helpful phrases and helpful techniques in order to support them, as well as going over some myths related to suicide.
That's good to know. And then that's like there's a youth, that was mm-hmm. the youth, and then you have like a more adult-oriented
yes.
training as well. And so you have two different curriculums, is that right?
Both are very, very similar. It's more of a matter of delivery.
Okay. Right? Okay. And then are there other trainings that are related to other mental health issues besides suicide?
We used to do a substance use training in the community quite a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we're looking to bring back. But at this time, we're reevaluating what community trainings we're going to offer going forward and how we would like to upgrade those.
And so you're looking at the need
yes.
and comparing that need. Like, for example, when you mentioned how many suicide ideation mm-hmm. calls you've had
yes.
versus like substance abuse calls or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay. That's good to know.
We try to have everything that we do at the Crisis Clinic centered on what our community needs. It doesn't do us any good to just assume what
right.
the community needs. We want to be very close. We have the benefit of being so close to the community and being grassroots, community driven. So making sure that we're leaning in and hearing what is needed.
Right. And then let's talk about volunteering, internships, donations. How can people get involved?
Yes. So if you're interested in volunteering with us and you may feel a little bit nervous, don't be. You don't need to have a background in mental health in order to be a volunteer crisis advocate with us. If you're a good listener and you're open to learning and growing and believe that no one in our community should be going through crisis alone, that's all you need. We'll teach you the rest. Each crisis advocate goes through an intensive interactive training that gives you the tools in order to take those calls and answer them with confidence. That is a 5 to 6 week training that's fairly intensive. We really want to make sure that you are as confident answering those calls as you can be. And if you're not interested in being a phone line volunteer, that is absolutely okay. We have other opportunities to be involved.
What are those opportunities?
We have administrative opportunities. Community outreach is one that we're actively looking for some support with, for sure. With regards to work, study, and internship right now, is we have an exclusive opportunity for Evergreen students going on right now. We have multiple work study positions that are available through Evergreen's the community-based
learning?
Yes. So we have three work study positions available through that. We have an outreach coordinator, a community educational coordinator, which the community education coordinator, that whoever we bring on into that role will be directly supporting our work for more community education trainings. And then we're also looking for an administrative assistant.
Okay. So talk about the outreach. So yes. If you, and with the volunteering outreach, what is entailed in that?
Yes. So our volunteers at outreach are the ones who would be going to community resource fairs to be present and
tabling. Resource fairs.
Yes.
Okay.
Being visible. That part of that also means putting up flyers in the community. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've walked around downtown at all, but we'll have little pull tabs that have our phone number on it and some information.
I have seen those when I've...
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, those get pulled fairly often. They'll start to run out. So every once in a while, we'll need someone to go around town, and especially in Mason County, too, because we want to make sure that they have just as much access as we do here in Thurston County, mm-hmm. making sure that they have... that they're well stocked too. So
okay.
A lot of that outreach activity is just making sure our flyers are up and posted up to date and being visible at community resource fairs.
Awesome. And then back to volunteering, you're talking about the intensive 5 week. So break that down for me. What does it look like to be a volunteer? Like, what's the process that you become a volunteer? What does the training look like for a volunteer?
Absolutely. So we do have an intensive training, because what our volunteers are expected to do is very important work. So we want to make sure that they're equipped for any scenario they could encounter on the phones. So we go over crisis intervention, boundaries, suicide assessment, go over intimate partner violence, talk about the designated crisis responders and what their role is in the mental health sphere in our community, talking about youth teen mental health crisis, talk about mental health, chemical dependency. We also have a cultural competency lens to all the work that we do to make sure that we're really grounding all of our work in a way that is well informed. But I think most importantly at all, we always talk about self-care, because as a crisis, as a phone line volunteer, you cannot pour from an empty cup.
Definitely. Yeah. That they're good. Mm-hmm. When they come in,
yes,
to receive calls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a 5 week training. How what's the schedule on that? Is it like how many days a week?
Yes. So we've changed this recently in the last couple of years to accommodate just what's more common with industry standard. Before we used to have it, so all of our volunteers would come in multiple times in a week. They would be here on site for multiple hours where we'd train them. Now it's a much more of a flipped classroom environment where they learn the content online, where they apply through quizzes and activities, listen to demonstrations that we've put together online. So when they come in each week, they're ready to apply with our trainers.
Okay, so you sign up to be a volunteer,
mm-hmm.
you go through the training module, And is that paste or?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's paste because we don't want our volunteers to just fly through it. Mm-hmm. So they stay on track with the cohort where our first week we talk about crisis. The next week they go through the curriculum on their own time to go over suicide or whatever the topic is for that week. And then they would come in and they would practice. So we have that opportunity for Q&A where they can say, hey, this was said in the module. Because usually if one person has a question, multiple people have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So going over review, answering questions, and then pairing off with our trainers to practice.
Like do a role play.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So let me just make sure I've got this straight.
Mm-hmm.
So you wait until you get a number of people to sign up for a training.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have that many people, mm-hmm. then you go, okay, we're going to begin at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody goes through the module, the first section, and then you'll have a in-person.
Yes.
And then after the in-person, everybody goes back and does the next part of the module and then in-person. So the module would be like through the week with a one in-person session a week?
Correct.
Okay.
And once they have completed the Crisis 101 and suicide training, then we have our prospective volunteers come in and in addition to those, do a shadow shift. That
okay.
was part of that. That's where we pair our experienced volunteers with our trainees who are coming on.
And that's what you mentioned in our introduction.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then it cycles around mm-hmm. and then they get to have their hands on.
Yep.
I am now. And then the person that they shadowed, their trainer, would
yep.
be sitting there watching them.
Yes, watching and listening and
okay.
providing that support in the moment as well mm-hmm. as debriefing after the call. We always want to make sure that our phone line volunteers, they feel confident going on the lines. Right?
Yeah.
So sometimes after they've gone through the curriculum, some of our volunteers need an additional couple phone line shifts where they're shadowing and they have someone with them to just say, hey, can you make sure I'm doing this right for a little bit? And that's totally okay. We want to make sure that you're comfortable and confident so when you're on the phone lines, you know what to do and you feel comfortable.
So the way that it's determined that a new volunteer is ready to do the phone line on their own, it's a mutual thing.
Yes.
So it's like the new volunteer would say, yeah, I think I feel ready now. And then the trainer person would go, yeah, I think you're ready now.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
And that can take as long as it needs to.
Yes. We've had people come through that, you know, after the first few shadow shifts, they feel it's like, I'm good. I'm good to go. Usually those are the ones who have some kind of a background in social services, or they've worked closer with the type of community of people that call us.
Or have had experiences
themselves mm-hmm. too. And whereas we have some others that maybe they need an additional month of shadow shifts. That's totally okay.
Awesome. So why do volunteers choose to stay involved with the crisis clinic? It sounds like it's really stressful work, but people love it.
Absolutely. One of the most common things that we hear from our volunteers is that they came to the crisis clinic because they wanted to make a difference in the community, for sure. But what really keeps them around is because the experience of volunteering with us ultimately gives back to them. Volunteering with the crisis clinic, and I can't reiterate this enough, is truly transformative. And that's just speaking as someone who previously came in as a volunteer. You really see that through our training. You learn active listening skills, how to de-escalate crisis, and how to guide people towards finding their own solutions. Many of our volunteers say that it's this training that changes the way that they communicate with their friends, families, and coworkers in the workplace. They've mentioned that it makes them feel more empathetic and patient. And for me, I felt more confident when helping people around me when they're struggling. And we see this from our volunteers too, when they tell it to their friends as well. We also work to build a real sense of belonging and camaraderie of those that are volunteering with us at the crisis clinic. Like you alluded to before, crisis phone light work can be stressful, but our team shows up to support each other. We make sure that our volunteers never feel alone when they're on shift. There's always a staff available to help debrief after a difficult call or just to check in. We also host volunteer socials, appreciation events, and even parties to celebrate major milestones for those who've been volunteering for us for quite some time. Ultimately, when you volunteer with us, you become part of a community, and that community is why people keep coming back shift after shift.
That sounds amazing. You know, when I interviewed Peer Olympia, they also do like self-care check-ins and parties and stuff with their team of volunteers as well. So it's good to hear that other organizations are doing a similar thing. So yeah, that's good to know. Self-care is important.
Absolutely. When you're doing this kind of work supporting others, you really can't pour from an empty cup. And just having that supportive community around who's doing what you're doing and being able to support and celebrate each other is, it's a really powerful thing.
Yeah.
And then how can people support you?
Yes. So beyond giving your time, I would say donations are truly what keeps our lines going 24/7. And for us, that's incredibly important because, like you had mentioned earlier, that 2 a.m. phone call mm-hmm. is so critical, and being able to have someone there to answer that. And like many nonprofits, we've been also impacted by funding cuts and increasing competition for grants. So what this means is that now more than ever, we're having to rely more on our community to support us, to make sure that we're still here 50 years from now. So to give you an idea of what our impact looks like, $50 could help cover the cost of training a crisis advocate. $100 could provide a suicide prevention training to a youth in our community, a classroom of 30 youth. $500 covers the cost of our phone lines for a month. Larger gifts allow us to dream even bigger. One of our priorities for us is to have text line services. That is becoming the industry norm, and for the crisis, and we've also been hearing this from our callers too, that they would love to be able to get that text support. So that's a priority for us going forward. But in order to have that, that involves a complete restructure in terms of how we answer our phones
right.
going forward. And that, unfortunately, costs money,
yeah.
right? So we are incredibly grateful for the members of our community who do give to us, but especially now more than ever, we do need that additional community support.
So you mentioned impact. Can you give us some statistics around that?
Yeah, so beyond just our call volume and how we average about 10,000 callers a year, and just from what I mentioned in 2024 regarding suicide de-escalations, when we had our youth outreach program at full force, we were impacting about 1,000 to 2,000 students each year through our youth outreach suicide prevention programs. And those directly relate to being able to reduce and destigmatize mental health and suicide within our local school districts.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
And so y'all have probably received grants in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a large portion. That's like your foundational, support. But are you not receiving grants that you used to? Is there a change?
We are. What we're seeing a lot in this space right now is a lot of funders now are starting to reevaluate who and what they fund. Because, for example, one foundation that funds multiple nonprofits in our community is reevaluating to see how they could better support nonprofits that are, say, primarily federally funded, but now that that funding has disappeared.
Okay.
So there's
a big reallocation going on with everybody right
yes,
now.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. And so how can people put in those donations? How can people do it?
Yeah. So you can go to our website, crisisclinic.org/donate, and that's the easiest way for us. If you're more tech savvy, you can always text CRISIS to 26989, and that will take you directly to our website as well.
Okay.
And if you can't afford to give financially, that's okay. Even sharing our number with someone who might need it or displaying our outreach materials in your business or agency would be a huge help. We already partner with multiple therapists in the community that will hand out our number to their clients. And that's something we've done for many years now. And if you are a therapist or behavioral health professional and you're listening to this and you would like some outreach materials, you can always reach out to us at info@crisis-clinic.org, and we are happy to mail those over to you.
Awesome. Thank you.
How is the Crisis Clinic planning to grow and adapt to meet the community's needs in the future?
Yes. So the Crisis Clinic is at a really pivotal point right now. We've been serving the community for more than 50 years, and while that history is important to us, what really energizes me and my team is looking forward to what the next 50 years could look like. And one of the biggest things we're focused on right now is building our capacity. That we want to make sure that when someone reaches out, no matter what time of day, no matter what medium, there's always someone ready to support them. So what that means for us right now is recruiting and training more volunteers to make sure that they have the support they need to survive and thrive in this work. And beyond this, the need for our volunteers is so great because the way people are asking for help is changing. That's why one of the things we're really excited about launching in the future is text and chat services. This has been a huge priority for us in the last couple years, and that's just from what we've heard from our callers, especially youth, that it feels safer to type out what they're feeling rather than saying it out loud over the phone. Being able to meet people where they are on a platform that feels most comfortable to them is going to ultimately be a game changer for how we serve our community going forward. We're looking to lay down that groundwork with our staffing now so that once we receive the funding, we can roll this out in a way that's sustainable, seamless, and is responsive for what our community needs. And ultimately, part of this work too is to position the Crisis Clinic to be part of the 988 system. You're familiar with 988, I assume?
A little bit. Remind us what that is, for some people might not know.
Yes. So about 5 or so years ago, 988 was rolled out. The intention is that it would be very similar to 911, but for mental health crises.
So okay.
If you dial 988, you can get access to a crisis advocate or a phone line, someone on the phone lines to be able to answer you directly, and is regionally based. Right now in our state, there are 3 entities that are answering calls throughout the entire state. That is going to be Crisis Connections, that serves King County, Volunteers of America, that serves the eastern half of our state, and at this moment I'm blanking on who's on the western half of our state. But they had done that as an initial rollout, but now that they've had the systems, they've worked out the kinks, they're starting to look for more regional hubs so that you can always dial our regular phone line number, 360-586-2800. But in the future, we're hoping that by adopting some of our practices to meet the standards that are needed for the 988, to be a 988 crisis hub, when you dial 988 or text 988 in our community, you would then reach us. And that is a multi-layer process that requires us to change our trainings, requires us to have more people on staff, and that's something we're beginning to slowly ramp up towards. And we have some other ways that we're looking to expand as well. Beyond the phone lines, we're working hard to be present and visible everywhere in the community. We don't want people to only learn about us when they're in crisis. We want them to know that we're here long before they ever need us. So you'll see us at resource fairs and local events. We were actually recently at Ollie Porch Fest that happened earlier on this month, and that was just so wonderful to be there and introduce, and in some cases, reintroduce our services to so many people.
Wow, that sounds really cool. You're talking about when the 988 number became a thing. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that was tied to when we were having the pandemic and the Black Lives Matter and everyone was like, defund the police, if that had anything to do with that, when they were trying to, okay, we don't want to defund the police, but we want to change how that looks, and maybe we want to equip police officers with social services to come out, kind of thing. Did it have something to do with that? I'm curious.
No, so 988, there's how they operate is they're multifaceted, right? So there's another organization in the community, Olympic Health and Recovery Services. They have the people who will go out into the community instead of or with police. That is in high risk scenarios, and they're completely separate. But they are part of the mental health ecosystem. What we're looking to do is to be the phone line people that are on the phones. We're not equipped to be the people who go out into the community. That is not where we're looking to grow as an organization. Where we're looking to grow is to have that visibility and ease of access. So for 988 is a much easier number to memorize and know as to our number.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
It's really just being able to access. This is our current operations, and if we were to become part of a 988 crisis hub, it would be the same deal. Sending people out, that is always our last resort.
Right.
And like I was talking about before with regards to mandated reporting, we want the caller to be in control.
Yes, definitely.
So to be a 988 crisis hub, part of that is having a accreditation from the International Council of Hotlines or the American Association of Suicidology.
Okay.
So in order to be a 988 crisis hub, you need to have credentials, or you need to have accreditation from the International Council of Hotlines or from the American Association of Suicidology. So they have a set out standards for what needs to be included in training, how to respond to crisis, as well as some like quality assurance metrics that the crisis clinic has to meet in order to have those accreditations. Now, from what we've seen, is our existing training program is already very close to what is required to be accredited, how we manage suicide and train our volunteers to do question, persuade, refer in terms of suicide prevention. We're already there in terms of where our curriculum is at. There's just some tweaks and measurements, and to be accredited, that's a multiple month and oftentimes multiple year process. That kind of answer the question.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's really good to know. Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah. And then is there anything else you would like to share?
I would say that if there's one thing I hope people can take away from our conversation today is that no one should ever have to face crisis alone. whether you're just calling for yourself or someone that you care about, when you call the crisis clinic, there is always a trained crisis advocate ready to pick up the phone, to listen without judgment, and to help you find your path forward for your crisis. We've been in the community for over 50 years, and we're committed to being here for another 50. But this isn't something that we can do alone. So if you believe in building a community where everyone has someone to turn to in their hardest moments, we'd love for you to get involved. Volunteer with us, make a gift, or even just share a number with someone who might need it. And just ultimately, thank you to everyone who listens to this podcast and being well informed about what's happening to our nonprofits in the community, because we need more people who are aware of what's going on, because it directly supports the resilience that we have in this community when more people are aware of what's going on and what resources are available so we can better support each other.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Holly.
Of course.
It was wonderful to speak with Holly and learn more about this great resource in our community. If you are needing someone to talk to, you can call their crisis line at 360-586-2800 or send a text to 26989. For volunteering or anything else, call their office at 360-586-2888. Or email them at info@crisis-clinic.org. You can also visit their website at crisis-clinic.org.
That's it for today's resource report produced by Pathways to Agency. At Pathways to Agency, we are driven by the belief that everyone should have the tools and support to achieve their goals and thrive in their communities. Our mission is to bridge the gaps in understanding, accessibility, and trust by connecting individuals to resources and sharing information and processes that can lead to personal and community growth. Resource Report offers information about existing and emerging nonprofits and resource organizations. Find out more at pathwaystoagency.org.
From there, you can follow the link to our podcast archive and listen to any episode anytime. And check out our YouTube channel.
Chaos Radio is not responsible or liable for any views or opinions expressed in the interviews conducted by Resource Report. Till next time, and thanks for listening.